Coming up on this episode of Disneyland Weekly, Splash Mountain loses its drop, breakfast is moving again,
Disneyland is getting a new president, and we will continue our trip around the park. Disneyland Weekly starts now.
This is Disneyland Weekly.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Disneyland Weekly for the week of February 7th, 2018. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. Thank you for joining us this week. Now, let's get to the news.
All personnel, clear the launch platform.
All personnel, clear the launch platform.
Warning light, sir. We've reached maximum depth limit.
Ease her back up to 80 fathoms.
80 fathoms, aye.
Magnification.
Can I possibly survive?
Star Tours announces the boarding of the Endor Express. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
If the past is any indication, you may want to purchase your Disneyland tickets before this weekend, as prices may increase. This weekend marks 1 year since the last price change that has become a tradition in the last few years. If you are holding out booking park tickets, now would be a good time to buy. Maybe they should think and consider opening a third U.S. park resort. That might help lower the prices.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit today about Disneyland shareholders call or something, or forecast, something I was looking at today. And they said that the reason that they have to continuously increase prices at the parks is to deter the fact that they have overcrowding at the parks.
Sure.
So why not build a third park, or a third resort somewhere in the U.S.? Now, I was talking to James about this, and he wasn't sure where you would be able to build one, because one of the things is they want you to have like a nice climate because it's outside. You wouldn't have it in our neck of the woods because it'd be snowing out. Nobody wants to go to a park in the snow necessarily. But wait, I've got an idea. So
indoor Disneyland.
Yes. So in South Korea, my brother went to this theme park, and it is like Disneyland for them. And there's actually an indoor and outdoor section. It's so
neat.
Cool. It's called Lottie World. And they have characters that are like, they're Mickey and Minnie and stuff, and they have a parade, and like, it's indoors, so it's super cool. I want to go there. But one of the cool things they do is it's indoors. Well, James was saying, well, what about like a fireworks show then? I said, well, you know, they'd have to innovate and come up with a new nighttime spectacular that isn't fireworks.
Well, you know, and so much of their nighttime shows now are projections anyways.
Yeah.
And the fireworks are just, I mean, they're there, but you wouldn't necessarily have to have them.
Well, and think about this, too. So in Lottie World, it's kind of like the Mall of America.
Okay.
Because the Mall of America has that indoor theme park area in the middle that has its skylights. So I guess you could do something above the skylights or something. But one thing that I was saying that would be really cool is sometimes the fireworks get canceled because of weather. You wouldn't have to worry about that if it was indoors.
That's true. And really, if you think about it, all of your favorite attractions are inside of show buildings anyways. The only time you're really outside is when you're walking from place to place.
Well, you know what just jogged my memory here talking about this? So if you're gonna have indoor stuff, it'd be kind of like Walt's vision to have Epcot, because Epcot was going to be shopping and everything inside and climate controlled. So you could have that, and you could do it. I mean, the Midwest, land is cheap. They could buy tons of land somewhere and build it. So I don't think southern U.S., because there's already Disneyland and Disney World is already southern. I think if you were to put one, even if you go crazy and you do something a little less centrally located, right? So you do like a Montana, which is like a bunch of nothing anyway. You could even do, I mean, we're near Minnesota. You could do it in Minnesota. I think that'd be a great idea.
The Dakotas.
Idea. Yeah. I think they should do it. I know from past history, you know, they tried to build Disney's America near Washington, D.C., but I just don't think that that was...
I don't think that's the right location.
Yeah. So I think if you did Midwest, obviously
near
Disney...
Chicago, that would make kind of sense.
Disney, build a third resort.
Build a third resort so we can go visit more often because it will be closer to home. And it will be good for everyone because then hopefully prices across all of the resorts...
would go down.
...will, decrease.
Well, you know, the other thing... is we'd have to change our podcast. It'd have to be Minnesota Disneyland.
No, why? Weekly. We could still be Disneyland Weekly. We don't talk about Disney World that much.
Yeah, but if we were going to go to the park more, like we could, you know what I mean? Like we'd be close.
That's okay. It could be Disneyland / whatever this new one's going to be called weekly.
There you go.
Be fine.
We have an update on the Splash Mountain refurbishment that is ongoing. They have removed the entire base of the main drop, exposing some of the internals for the attraction. I'm hoping this means that there is an extensive refurbishment to resolve all the issues with lighting and animatronics that we've reported on previously.
Okay, this is so Disney nerdy of me, but I'm more excited. I mean, yes, I'm excited that they're doing the refurb on this, and hopefully we're going to get a better experience on this attraction, but I'm really just excited that they're kind of dismantling this. I just think it'd be cool. I'm going to be all over the internet trying to find I know. I want to look like... To me, that's fascinating. I think that's so cool.
But it's possible they've done this before. I've just never seen any pictures of this. And I think it's interesting
because it's pretty extensive.
Well, yeah, because you're tearing it apart to get it all that underlying. Yeah. And the pictures that Mice Chat has is you could see like conduit of like cable and stuff that like obviously runs probably power and some of the animatronics perhaps. So
see, and I'm just fascinated with the behind the scenes stuff. So this is just like,
oh yeah,
so cool to me.
I agree.
Breakfast at Disneyland can't seem to stay in one location if rumors hold true. Breakfast should be moving from Rancho del Zocalo in Frontierland to the Red Rose Tavern in Fantasyland on February 7th. This follows the move from the Riverbell Terrace in Frontierland previously. So we were just discussing before the podcast that it seems like the Red Rose Tavern is actually a little bit, I don't want to say a downgrade, but it just seems like it's a much smaller location. So this move kind of surprises me.
Yeah, I saw, this was from Mice Chat, and I saw in their update that they actually went there for breakfast, and they've got, so in Rancho Zocalo, you got the two sides, and one side, you know, during normal, like, dinner time, there's, like, a Mexican, like, taco side, and then there's, like, a barbecue side. And for breakfast, they have, like, a normal breakfast side, and the other side is like a Mexican breakfast or, like, a Spanish breakfast.
Sure.
And that side was, like, empty, and there was, like, a huge line for the normal breakfast side. So I think maybe they're just trying to, I don't know, they could have done normal breakfast on both sides. I don't know. I just wish they would stop moving stuff around. I really liked it when it was at the Riverbell Terrace because it was, like, my go-to place, and I just feel, I don't know. We'll have to see how it all rolls out. Well, those of you familiar with park management might recognize the name Michael Colglazier. Colglazier is the current Disneyland Resort president. This week, it was announced that he is moving to the Disney Parks Asia Division as managing director. Taking his place at Disneyland will be Josh D'Amaro, who started his Disney career at Disneyland and has been in the company for 20 years. Let's hope that Josh will do as well as Michael did over the last 5 years. Now, Michael Colglazier was known for taking over the park for the 60th anniversary, which was very successful. Mm-hmm. Before that, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head now, but they had the previous guy before that took over for the 50th anniversary, and he did an amazing job, and people didn't want him to leave, and then he left, and we got Michael Colglazier. But so hopefully Josh D'Amaro will be as good.
We'll find out. Finally, this week, we have a firm date for the return of Main Street vehicles. Friday, March 16th, we will see them return to their former glory. Hopefully, the fireworks will also return on this date as well.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that want the fireworks and stuff to return.
Well, and I don't know, has anybody gone out and looked? I was just looking through photos that are posted on Mice Chat, and I am so glad that I'm not at the parks right now because they have everything is just walled off, and it's just so... Oh, it's so different looking, and it's almost amazing to me that the people are still going, like, they still have people going to the parks because it's very shut down and very blocked off looking, but, I mean, they gotta keep open.
Something that should be mentioned with this, too, is, well, first of all, there's no off-season anymore, so when are you gonna do this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I'm excited to see this because I'm curious to see what the brick part is gonna look like for it.
I think it's gonna be really cool, but it's just... It's hard to get to that point.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's always pain, and then it ends up being a lot better. I mean, these haven't been replaced since the park opened. So one of the other things that I saw with this is that because of the fact that the Town Square and Hub are both behind construction walls, basically, when you are let in for rope drop, you used to line up at the front of each of the lands for rope drop. Mm-hmm. Well, they've actually moved the rope drop into the lands now because of that. The other thing, there's a great video if you go onto YouTube, onto the Disneyland Resort YouTube channel. They've got a video on there about how the horses are enjoying their time off, and they have like how they're exercising them and
sure.
letting them out, and like, you know, because they got this time off, they're not pulling the carriage around or anything. Well, now we're moving to our discussion topic, and again, we're continuing our tour of Disneyland. This week, we're talking about two different lands. One of them is chock full of stuff. So if one of them is chock full of stuff, why do you have two, you asked Tig. Well, we have to go around the park like you would be walking around the park. And last week, if you remember, we went to Fantasyland. And of course, the next land we would go to after Fantasyland would be Mickey's Toontown. And Mickey's Toontown only has like three things we're actually going to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's two true attractions in Mickey's Toontown, but there's a lot of cool kind of interactive things too that we're just going to kind of touch on.
Yeah, so attractions in Toontown include Gadget's Go Coaster, Mickey's House and Meet Mickey, which are like together, Minnie's House, Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin. Others in the land that we're not going to talk about really at all include Chippendale's Treehouse, Donald's Boat, and Goofy's Playhouse, because they're really just kind of like play areas. They're not really... I don't really consider them attractions. No. I think of attractions as like things you get on and mm-hmm. ride.
Yeah.
Mickey's House is cool because there's a lot of animatronics in there mm-hmm. as you go through. And like, you know, it's an experience. It's not just walk through this static thing. So what's first on our list? What are we going to talk about first?
Gadget's Go Coaster.
The ride that is known for taking longer to load than it is to actual ride.
That's actually one of my little fun facts here. So I'm going to start with it opened on January 24th, 1993. I should actually back up and mention that Toontown, the land of Toontown, opened on January 24th, 1993. So it's only located in Disneyland and in Tokyo. And at 44 seconds, it is the shortest attraction in Disneyland.
You know what?
I can't believe it's only 44 seconds.
Have you ever ridden it?
No.
I rode it once. I rode it once because I was like, you know, I've never ridden this. And so I waited in line forever. And then we went through it and I was like, it's over already?
Yeah.
Because we had waited in line like 40 minutes before it.
Yeah. No, yeah. When I went with my cousin's two younger children, they were 8 and 4. Of course, we had to go check out Gadget's Go Coaster.
Yeah. And most of that time, I think, is the lift hill.
Yeah. I did like the theming, though. I thought that was really clever.
Yeah, no, it is cute. It kind of reminds me of what the Slinky Dog coaster is going to be like in Toy Story Land.
Mm-hmm.
But the Toy Story Land one seems obviously a lot longer.
Yeah.
The other thing, I don't know if you're going to talk about this, but the capacity per train is only 16 people, and there's only like the one train. So 16 people,
not a very high capacity.
Seconds. Yeah, so
I think it's only 44 seconds then, huh?
Yeah, I guess. You know, 16 seconds longer in Tokyo Disneyland.
Ooh, watch out.
What else you got?
That's all I've got for Gadget's Go Coaster.
What are we moving on to?
Let's go to Mickey's House / meet and greet for Mickey.
I like Mickey's House. I have fond memories. There's a video somewhere of me going there when I was a kid, and the like groundhogs or whatever are popping up out of the garden area there.
Oh, sure.
And I was like, oh, look, the carrots are going away. And like my cute little 12-year-old self. And I remember my family just making fun of me for it forever. And you go through and you go to Mickey's theater and you watch a little bit of Mickey shorts and then you go meet Mickey. Sometimes it's Sorcerer Mickey. Sometimes it's not. It's air conditioned, which is nice.
Always good. Always a bonus. So this did open on January 24th, 1993. And Mickey's House is located in Disneyland, Magic Kingdom, Tokyo, and in Hong Kong.
Now, the Hong Kong one, I think
I think I saw that they're called slightly something different in
right.
each of the different parks.
But the one I remember looking at this, was it... so in Hong Kong, it's actually located on Main Street, and it actually closed in 2009. But it was located on Main Street in Hong Kong. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. But, you know, it kind of makes sense since when you... Most mornings when you enter the park, Mickey's hanging out on Main Street and you get to meet, you know, a lot of times you have the chance to meet Mickey on Main Street.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I guess it makes sense and it kind of doesn't. Dude, they must not have a Toontown.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Dedicated area.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, where else would you put them then? Yeah.
Anything else for Mickey's?
That's all I've got for Mickey's.
All right, let's move on to.
So Minnie's is kind of basically the same thing. It's a walk-through attraction.
You meet her outside. in her garden.
Well, yes, but it's basically the same thing.
I just remember walking through and I was like, it's not air conditioned. You have to go outside to meet Minnie. So Minnie kind of got the shaft. She has to be outside.
A little bit. Poor Minnie. Poor, poor Minnie. But you get to walk through and there's all sorts of, I don't know, things that you can kind of do in her house that then... I don't know.
Well, it was better than... Well, Mickey's house had a little bit of it, but, like, you could sit on her couch and look at her fridge and see her dishwasher.
Well, there was some, like, interactive things you could do throughout the house, too.
Yeah. Like, pick up the phone or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's nice for little kids.
I think... And honestly, I like both of them for kids for this reason, because how... I mean, how cool would that be? I never got to experience going to those places as a child, but I would think, like, when I was there with the four-year-old and the eight-year-old, they were just in awe and thought it was the coolest thing, and they kept saying, oh, look, it's Minnie's whatever. It's like, because they had like her like makeup boudoir type thing was out, and they thought it was so cool. Look, oh, look, it's Minnie's makeup, and you know, whatever. So
totally,
it was adorable.
Well,
it was a very long wait to go meet her, but it was adorable.
Well, my nephew loves Mickey Mouse, and I just imagine like him going into Mickey's house.
That's,
like,
I mean, that's awesome.
It's in his neighborhood and stuff. That's pretty cool. I mean, I know we've talked previously on the podcast about Toontown needs to go away and probably be rethemed as like a Nightmare Before Christmas.
It is,
Land.
And it is, but it is a little magical for the youngsters. Yeah, so
we sometimes forget that. There's another attraction we'll talk about when we get.
The park is not all about us, Tig.
That's true.
It's hard to know.
There is another attraction we'll talk about when we get into Tomorrowland that is similar. We don't really like it that much, but I can see why the kids would like it. So moving on.
So I would say, in my opinion, the only actual true attraction in Toontown would be Roger Rabbit's cartoon spin. So this opened not when Toontown opened. This was actually about a year later. Opened January 26th of 1994. This is located in both Disneyland and in Tokyo. It's a fun little ride. This is one of those things that I'm surprised is there. I would think that Roger Rabbit's getting a bit outdated, since that movie, I think, was...
89.
It was either 88 or 89. So, I mean, a lot of young kids, I don't think, would probably... be familiar with Roger Rabbit, but it's kind of, you know, it's wacky, it's zany, so it's still fun.
It's a cool attraction. You're in the taxi cab and you get hit by this dip and you're spinning around. The only problem I have with this attraction is I can't ever get a really good look at anything because you're spinning around.
That's true, yeah. And maybe that's on purpose. Maybe if you could actually see everything, it's really not that well done or something.
Well, one of the scenes in this that I really like is Roger reaches over and puts a hole on the wall that you go through, and looks really cool. Yeah. I was like, that's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's all I have to say.
The only little neat little tidbit that I found on this was in the start of the rides queue, they have license plates kind of all over the place, and a lot of them have like little hidden Disney puns on them. So some of the license plates are TN Town for Toontown. I've got Cap 10HK for Cap 10 Hook. There's 101 Dalmatians. I mean, there's all sorts of little cutesy.
You know, I forgot those
things.
Were in there. I thought that was pretty cool. That. I remember when I'm standing in line, it's something to look at.
Oh, that other one I like too. The number one Durland for Wonderland.
Oh yeah, nice.
L Merm 8.
Little Mermaid. Yep. So something
I thought that was clever.
I would be remiss if I did not talk about this, because it is one of my favorite places to eat in the park. Believe it or not.
Toontown, huh?
Pluto's Doghouse.
Oh, sure.
Has really good hot dogs. And they have the bar of goodies over under the gazebo in the middle there. Something that I always forget about, and the only reason I mention this is because usually when I'm eating a hot dog in Toontown, City Hall, every like 15 minutes, like the clock goes off, and characters will come out of City Hall and go to the areas of Toontown and be meted. So one area always see... characters is Toontown.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
So, almost forgot about that. Well, as we continue around, we will now leave Mickey's Toontown, and we will walk down the Small World Mall past the Matterhorn, and we'll end up in Tomorrowland. Now, unlike last time where we kind of talked about, we kind of went around the land, we kind of just have a list. We're just going to go down the list. One of the first things actually you come in contact with if you're coming from Main Street is the Astro Orbiter, which I have problems with this because I don't mind the Astro Orbiter. We talked about this in the Fantasyland episode, that it's very much like Dumbo, and Dumbo's like the Astro Orbiter. It was different to me when it was the old Tomorrowland, because it used to be up on top of the People Mover loading, kind of like it is in Magic Kingdom now, where you're up in rocket jets, like way above the land. Yeah. So it was like there was a thrill to it, even though it was just a spinning thing. So to me, back in the old Tomorrowland before 1998's refurbishment, you used to, it would be different riding Dumbo and riding the Astro Orbiter. Mm-hmm. Totally different. But anyway.
Well, actually, it was not the Astro Orbiter. That's part of my little informational
thing.
It was.
They moved it down and renamed it. Yep. It used to be called Rocket Jets.
Yep, yep. So anyway, so the Astro Orbiter, as we know it today, opened May 22nd, 1998. Previously, though, like Tay was saying, it was not the first rocket spinner attraction. So in 1956 through 66, it was called the Astro Jets and the Tomorrowland Jets. It kind of shifted. Mm-hmm. And then 67 and 97 was when it was the Rocket Jets.
Yeah.
This is one of those few attractions that is located in all six of the parks. I did think it was interesting because the concept drawings for this reimagined Astro Orbiter, as like I said, as we know it today, actually had it so that the guests were boarding underground.
That would have been cool.
Yep, instead of how it's, you know, all ground level. There was also another concept that had the center of the attraction featuring a water moat feature in it. So I don't really
understand. Kind of Dumbo-y.
Yeah, and I don't really understand how that. I'm glad they didn't go that route because that doesn't seem very futuristic.
The underground thing sounds cool, though.
The underground thing would have been cool. Yeah.
Now, the one thing that a lot of people argue with the Astro Orbiter and is a major thing when it comes to the new Tomorrowland of 1998 is they added all those rocks and they put the Astro Orbiter right there. So it makes getting in and out of Tomorrowland
very it's a little bottlenecked.
Yeah, it was terrible. Well, I guess we're just going to go this way. So as we go into the park, as we go into the land, on the left-hand side, we get Buzz Lightyear's Astro Blasters. Teresa, what did you find out about Buzz Lightyear?
So this opened back in March 10th, 2005. Also is located in all six of the parks. And I thought it was interesting because this show building is actually repurposed. It was the original show building for the Circle Vision 360 Theater.
Have you ever experienced Circle Vision?
I was just about to say I never got to experience that. I've experienced Circle Vision for, I think it was actually at Walt Disney World in Epcot. Yep.
Epcot
I experienced
has a lot.
It there. I never experienced it in Disneyland.
Yep, because Epcot used it a lot. So the China Pavilion has it.
I was
going to
say, I think it was the China Pavilion that I was at.
The Canada Pavilion has one, and I believe the French Pavilion has one. Now, the Canada one, I know this is totally off topic, but the Canada one, James and I like because they have a song in there that goes like, Canada, Canada, my Canada. And we just loved it.
Tag's wonderful singing skills.
You literally go in and it gets stuck in your head all day. So be warned if you go to Epcot and go into Circle Vision. Canada. But it was cool. It was when Circle Vision first opened, I remember reading how they used to have to operate it. So nowadays it's all digital projection.
Sure.
They said it works. Well, so what they used to do is they actually, at one time, they had two different movies playing in there, and it was film. So they would actually shut the attraction down for like an hour so they would switch all the film reels over, and then you had to like sync up all the reels. Can you imagine?
That sounds awful.
Yeah. Good thing we have great technology now.
Thank you for
technology. So back to today and the Buzz Lightyear.
Mm-hmm.
What else do you
have
to say?
That's all I had.
Oh.
This is actually one of the attractions that I have not ever experienced at Disneyland.
Really?
I know.
Disney World, did you experience it?
Yes.
I actually like the Disneyland version better because when I wrote it in Disney World, the guns are different to like hit the targets.
Yeah, so I was looking at that. So the guns in Disney World are stationary. You can't pick them up, whereas in Disneyland you can pick them up.
Yes, and you can aim them a lot better that way.
Yep, and that's what they were saying.
I feel like to in my mind it's an underrated attraction because I never really think to go on it, but when I go on it, I like it.
You know, and for some reason, I always kind of look past it, too. I think I'm just so focused.
The beginning of the land, you
I'm
walk
just so
right by.
Focused, and I'm so tunnel visioned on either Star Tours or Space Mountain.
Yeah. So moving on, I'm going to jump now to my favorite attraction at Disney World or Tokyo Disneyland or Disneyland, and that is the Disneyland monorail. So we're going to talk a little bit about the history real quick. I've got a lot on the monorail because I love the monorail. My dream job is monorail pilot.
That's what it's called. It's a pilot.
Yes. Unfortunately, I think I want to be a monorail pilot at Disney World because there's more track.
Well, yeah, there's more to do.
But I would do it anywhere. Monorail. So the original monorail cars were designed by legendary Imagineer Bob Gurr. It originally opened on June 14th, 1959, and was limited to just Tomorrowland. The original track just wound around Tomorrowland.
Really?
Yep. And also on that same day, the subs opened and mm-hmm. the Matterhorn opened. So it was all three e-tickets that day. Yep. So on opening day, they had red and blue trains. They were the Mark 1s. Each of them had three cars. In 1961, so just a couple years later, they expanded the track out to the Disneyland Hotel. So it's 2.5 miles now. Then they also introduced, at the same time, they introduced the Mark II train, which was a yellow train, and then they upgraded the blue and red to a Mark II, which extended it to four cars. So they had to update the station in Tomorrowland to lengthen it to accommodate. Sure. 7 years later, in 1968, the Mark III trains were introduced. The first one was a green train. It had five cars. And then yellow, blue, and red were upgraded to also have five cars and be the Mark IIIs. That lasted all the way until 1985, where they were slowly starting to phase out the Mark IIIs as they were rebuilt as Mark Vs.
What happened to four?
Mark IV was the first Disney World monorails.
Oh, okay.
So we had the Mark Vs for a long time, from 1985 to 2006, or 7, sorry, 2007. And those were actually, you went from Mark V to a Mark VII because the Mark VI was in Disney World. Yep. So the Mark V, some changes happened. So Mark III, remember there was green, yellow, blue, and red. Well, the green Mark V monorail became the purple monorail. The yellow became the orange. The blue became a lighter blue, and red stayed as red.
Red.
In 1994, the beam was realigned for Indiana Jones Adventure because the show building had to extend out, so they had to kind of bump the track out. Just 5 years later, in 1999, Disney California Adventure caused downtime all the way through 2001. A lot of this time was one-way traffic on the section of the beam that did not go into the construction zone for the Grand Californian and the Disney California Adventure Park. Finally, back in 2001, went back to full service. In 2004, the orange monorail was removed and taken to Glendale to be reverse engineered to build new monorails. Blue was removed in 2006 for rebuilding and became a Mark 7. Red was the first one back in 2007, but it had design issues. So it actually did not have its first day of launch until July 3rd, 2008. And then blue joined it in September of 2008. Orange joined it in April of 2009. The new fleet, remember at the height we had five different cars. There are just three now. There's only the two stations, Tomorrowland and Downtown Disney. And one interesting thing, so one of the things that is most known about the monorails is their horn. They're distinctive.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Okay. So the horn must be sounded twice when departing the station, once where the track parallels the old People Mover track, once when you're approaching the Matterhorn, and then a couple other tidbits were they will blow the horn when greeting the Disneyland Railroad. So if the railroad's coming, they'll blow it once to greet it.
Sure.
Also, if there is a bird on the track, they will blow it. So one of the interesting things that I kind of wondered about for a long time, and what some of you listeners might be wondering, so I wanted to kind of talk about it, is evacuation. So obviously, you're up on this pillar in the sky. How do you get evacuated?
I hope they have inflatable slides.
I don't think so. So they're handled differently depending on the location of the train and the nature of the emergency. So if a train is at the station platform or at the work platform, guests can exit the train onto the mm-hmm. platform. Big deal. Exiting a train is possible even when the doors of the train cars are closed. A cast member outside the car can forcibly open the rightmost door panel of the car by releasing the air pressure holding the panel closed. It's beneath the rectangular center window that is similar in appearance to a car door handle. If a train is stopped on open beam, guests evacuate through emergency exits located on the roof. They open the roof hatches by first removing the plastic from the ceiling above the bulkhead, which also has a footstool, and then lifting a hinged hatch that will flip access bulkhead, dividing the two train cars. Guests evacuate to the roof by climbing through the open hatch onto the top of the train. The bulkheads separating cars are designed as firewalls that will contain a fire within a car to just that car. The open hatch allows guests in the affected car to transfer to the adjacent car where they can safely wait. If the emergency affects the entire train, then guests are evacuated to the surface of the beam. Guests again open
emergency
hatches, but do not simply move to the adjacent car. Instead, they use a small handrail present along the top of each train car to move all the way to the front of the train. The Disneyland Fire Department assists in the safe evacuation of the disabled train. Wow. So I remember reading an old version of this, and it might have even been for the Disney World one, but basically you slide down the front of the train, and then you're supposed to like crawl along the beam to the nearest like whatever. I don't think I ever want to be evacuated from a monorail.
No, I don't think so either.
Now, there has been times at Disneyland where I've seen, this was before the new Mark 7s came out, but they, the maintenance trolley actually came out and like can grab onto a monorail and like pull it. So,
that's cool.
Yeah, so I think there was a couple times where it like stopped, and the maintenance trolley does not operate on the electric of the beam. It's gas powered, so it propels itself. So it goes, it grabs the thing, and it goes through. If you're at Disneyland late enough and you check out the monorail beam, or just watch it, you know, I was there at like 2 a.m. one night for some reason, and the maintenance car actually goes around the whole beam and inspects it every night. So that was kind of something cool to see, this thing going, we're flying by with guys checking out the beam. That's all I have for the monorail. That was a lot, but I love the monorail. Like I said, monorail pilot is what I'd love to be. So as we continue on, Teresa, you found a treasure trove of information about Submarine Voyage.
I did. I was actually surprised. So the Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage opened June 11, 2007. It is only in Disneyland. So as most of you know, this is retheming of the old classic Submarine Voyage, which is open from 1959 to 1998. So when they closed the Submarine Voyage in 1998, they realized that it wasn't going to be a permanent thing. So it kind of sat empty for a while. So one thought to resurrect the subs was to actually create an attraction based on Disney's Atlantis, The Lost Empire. But unfortunately, since the film did not do so well in the box office, they scrapped that idea. Another hope was to retheme it based on the Treasure Planet movie, which also did not do so well in the box office. So that one got scrapped. We're on a theme here. No, but Nemo did well. So that's why it eventually went to Nemo. But I was surprised that between the thought process of either Atlantis or Treasure Planet and when it finally became Nemo, they did briefly consider to theme it to the Little Mermaid, which would have made a lot of sense. And I kind of wish I would have been able to see that attraction. I think that would have been pretty cool. But we have Ariel's Under the Sea Adventure now instead, so that's okay. Right. But for Nemo, for the attraction, the Imagineers used more than 30 tons of recycled crushed glass to paint the coral and the rockwork in the lagoon.
Really cool,
I thought that was so, so cool. And then, you know how we were just saying earlier how I love seeing rides kind of disassembled?
Mm-hmm.
After like really kind of researching this one, I would love to see the pool drain. I would love to see how this is actually set up. It's a little mind-boggling to me how they did it. I think it'd be so cool to see it.
I would see
the whole thing, like get drain out the lagoon. I want to see how they have like how the scenes actually look normally, not just from your little submarine porthole. And I'd like to see what the lagoon looks like drained. I just think it's so cool. Anyways, so the Imagineers, this is cool too. The Imagineers, in creating Finding Nemo's Submarine Voyage Adventure, whatever it's called, they also created more than 40 new colors. Some of the ones that I thought were kind of funny was there's one, a new color called Yamber, which is a cross between yam and amber colors. But there's 40 new colors just for the lagoon area. I thought that was crazy. So in 2008, Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage did receive an award for an outstanding achievement from the Themed Entertainment Association. And I also thought it was kind of neat that this attraction reused the 8 original 1959 submarines.
So did you see in your research that when it was before it was the Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage, that it was actually like the second or third largest submarine fleet in the world?
No, I didn't see that. I did see that they were trying to scrap it and get rid of it. And I can't remember who it was that was fighting for the submarines to come back. And so he contracted somebody from the military to come and inspect the submarines because they were just going to, Disney just wanted to get rid of them. Mm-hmm. And they found out that there was at least 50 years left on those submarines. And yeah. Like, ooh, that's too valuable. Yeah, we do need to do this back. Well, I mean, but I did, yeah, that's interesting. That was the largest fleet.
The only problem with this, so an interesting thing about this attraction, we kind of talked about this when we talked about the Sleeping Beauty Castle walkthrough, is this is one of the attractions that has like no ADA compliance to speak of. Like you, right. There's no ramp to get into it or anything. If you're claustrophobic, it's a bad idea for you too. If you want to experience this attraction, there is a room that you can go into and they have a screen where it's the attraction. Yep. So, actually, Laura's mom was in a wheelchair when we went, and we went in there and watched it. It was pretty cool.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I think the whole thing's cool. And one other thing, while I'm waiting for the monorail, and it's a hot day, I just want to jump in there. It looks so refreshing, because they got the bubbles going.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, back in the day, when the submarines were first new, for a while, they actually had real mermaids. Not real mermaids,
but
they had
mermaids. So, we're talking back in the like the opening days, like back in the 50s and the 60s.
One of the problems was they had these blonde hair, and they would jump in with the chlorine, and their hair would turn green.
Mm.
So, that was one problem. The other problem was they would have young teenagers would jump into the water to swim out to the mermaids.
Oh, dear Lord.
So, that's why they got rid of the mermaids.
I thought there was something, too, about... like them being out there, they were being exposed to some sort of toxic something, maybe.
Oh, I'm
maybe
sure. Everything wrong, was probably toxic back then. All right, so moving on from the Finding Nemo submarine voyage, we come to everybody's favorite, Space Mountain.
Ooh, Space Mountain. So this originally opened back on May 27th, 1977. This is located in Disneyland, Magic Kingdom, Hong Kong, and Tokyo. I did think it was interesting that Space Mountain actually first opened at Walt Disney World in 1975, and that was after the early success of the Magic Kingdom. So it was interesting that they decided to first open it there. This was the
second... It's scaled down here, though, because in Magic Kingdom, it's got two.
This is... Yeah, they after it did so well there, they decided to make... They called it miniature versions. I don't really consider Disneyland to be miniature, but whatever. So they did smaller scaled back versions for the rest of the parks that they then later put it in. But this is the second roller coaster that was built at Disneyland. And I didn't know this, but Walt Disney originally came up with the idea for a space-themed roller coaster, which he decided this after the success of the Matterhorn. But a number of factors, including his death and the Disney's company focus on building Walt Disney World, led to the project's postponement. But I guess I never realized that.
I didn't know that
since it had opened so much later, I never would have thought that Walt had anything to do with it. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Did you see in your research for Space Mountain that right before the 50th anniversary, they completely replaced the track?
Yes, I did. And they put, what was it, in ride sound systems.
Yeah. So the thing that I liked most about the rebuild was prior to the rebuild, it was very rough. It was very rough.
It was.
And afterwards, it felt like a... Obviously, it felt like a brand new attraction because it was basically a brand new attraction.
So
the sound
smooth.
Was great. It was so smooth. It felt faster, mm-hmm. even though it wasn't.
Yep. That's still one of those, again, I would like to see... Maybe it would ruin it for me, but I would like to see... What with it's, I would on. Love to ride that with the lights on.
Problem is, I feel like you would never want to ride it again because you'd be like, these things are too close to me.
You know, I don't think they're going to be, I don't think it's
I feel
close.
That way on Big Thunder sometimes, though. There's a couple of those things where you got your hands up and you're like, ooh, my hands almost touched that.
With how many people that go on those rides, there's no way that they're too close together.
Yeah, I like Space Mountain a lot.
Disney doesn't want to get sued. They don't want people to get hurt.
Yep.
They're not too close. But it's interesting because that is a big myth with Space Mountain is that, don't put your arms up because you're going to hit the other track. Well, you're not going to hit the other track.
They have their, you gotta have their like state laws that you have to have.
Monster arms if you're going to hit the other track.
Exactly.
Tracks. But that would be one that I would love to just once ride with the lights on.
Did you have something else for that?
That's it.
Wow.
I try to keep it short.
Okay. So I'm gonna go with the favorite, and then we'll finish on a dud. So...
Oh, no. Go with the dud.
Dud. Okay, so...
Nobody wants that on a bad note.
The Disneyland Autopia. So the Disneyland Autopia opened on July 17, 1955. Originally, before the park opened, the cars were tested with no bumpers, and the cars were almost destroyed, so they had to add bumpers on it.
Oh.
Other versions of, now this is interesting. So the Autopia actually has had multiple versions in the park at the same time. So
really,
other versions of Autopia were the Midget Autopia, the Fantasyland Autopia, and the Junior Autopia. In 2000, the Tomorrowland and Fantasyland tracks were combined to get what you have today.
They just, ugh.
They need to convert them to electric cars if they're going to keep them, but we've talked about this numerous times on the show. They just need to reclaim the land. But like I said earlier, when we were talking about Toontown, this is one of those attractions I think the little kids like.
Yeah, and you know, I'm all for keeping it open, but you know, I wonder why they decided to combine those two tracks and make it into
one longer experience. Mm-hmm. Well, because, so a lot of people don't know this, but if you go, well, now it's where the, it's near where the Matterhorn Fastpass distribution is. So it used to be a smoking area too over there. There's that weird covered area under the monorail that there's like tables over there.
Yeah.
That was the line for the motorboat cruise that was over there. And then like on the other side was where the line was to get on the Fantasyland Autopia. So that's kind of where that used to be.
Yeah, I wonder what the reasoning was for them to have two Autopias at once.
I think one was smaller for like littler kids, because like little kids can't drive the Autopia car, really. Yeah. Because it's hard to push down on that gas pedal.
Well, you know, and I would think, which I don't know, I'm not a 12-year-old or a 14-year-old, but to me, like, there's that kind of like tween in between group that's, you know, not little kids and not, you know, teenagers quite yet. I don't see them getting really excited about this ride. So,
but think about when this attraction,
I could see it being themed for smaller kids, because that's pretty cool.
But think when this attraction was created, driving in the 50s.
Oh yeah,
big deal.
For sure.
It's also one of those attractions, and I know there are people out there that look at it like I look at the Tiki Room. Like, it's an original open day attraction.
True.
Do not change it. Do not take it from us. You can take it from our cold dead Disneyland hands. I am not one of those people. I think it should be gotten rid of. And I'm sure there's people that think the Tiki Room should go away.
Maybe don't get rid of it, but like you said, maybe let's update it and have electric cars instead of the gas cars.
Well, you know what they could have done? They could turn it into an electric thing. They could put it as an expansion to Cars Land and let you drive cars around.
Yeah, and then, we talked about this, I think, because then you could theme it and then say, hey, you want to drive Mater? Hey, you want to drive...
Right. So before we finish on the last big attraction, I cannot talk about Tomorrowland without talking about a couple things that I dearly miss. The People Mover. Mm. Tomorrowland Transit Authority in Disney World is good, but it's not the People Mover. One great thing about the People Mover, it was like 16 minutes long, got you off your feet. It gobbled up guests. And you got to see a lot of the land. Like, what
the
heck?
I never got to experience the People Mover.
So you know why it'll never come back? Have we talked about this before?
I think so, but remind me.
So because they used the track for the rocket rods, it put a lot of stress.
Oh, that's right.
And it can't really be used. And with they'd have to rebuild parts of the track. And because they'd have to rebuild parts of the track, there's new building codes, and you'd have to have exit stairways like all over the place, and it just wouldn't be feasible.
You know
feasible.
What I don't understand is why they don't get rid of the track.
Because it's money, and right now they figure why. I'm sure they will whenever they do something with Tomorrowland. So the next attraction that I would be remiss without talking about that I miss dearly is the Skyway to Fantasyland. And we could have talked about it when we were talking about Fantasyland, because then there was a Skyway
to Tomorrowland. We did a little bit.
But that was also a great attraction, because when the Main Street Electrical Parade was going along the parade route, and it's like impossible to get across the park, because like, I don't know if you've ever tried to cross the parade route, but it's pretty terrible.
It's not easy.
You could ride the Skyway, and it would take you right over the parade. And that was cool, because you could see the parade from above. I always like seeing things from above. I think it's pretty cool. I really miss those two attractions. I also finally got to experience an attraction that used to be originally in Disneyland, and they built it at Disney World, and I'm so glad it's still Disney World, and that was the Carousel of Progress.
Oh, yeah.
That is still, I think, a great attraction, and I wish they would put that back in the Interventions building or the Carousel building. But that building takes up a lot of space. They should probably just tear it down and put something new there. Let's be honest. So finally, let's wrap up Tomorrowland with Star Tours. So Star Tours opened on January 9th, 1987. It came about after George Lucas and Disney made Captain EO. They bought 4 military-grade flight simulators for it at a cost of $500,000 a piece. What I thought was interesting was, so they got the flight simulators installed and ready to go. Lucasfilm did a whole the original ride attraction video, and the way they programmed it was a guy sat in the flight simulator with a joystick and watched the film and just kind of made the car go the way the film was going. So
high tech.
Can you imagine though? You're like, well, let's see how far forward it can go. That flight simulator is so cool because when you're going like into like hyper, like you feel like you're like moving, or when you're like going down, I mean, it can't be moving that much, but it is.
That'd be one of those, again, cool behind the scene things would be to stand in the show building and watch how the flight simulators, how much they're actually moving and what they're doing. That'd be cool.
I think we'd be surprised. It
probably doesn't move as much as it feels like.
It either doesn't move as much or it moves more, and like, who knows? Mm-hmm. So Disneyland remained open for 60 hours from January 9th at 10 a.m. to January 10th at 10 p.m. for its opening, which I thought was pretty cool. On July 27, 2010, it was closed to make the Star Tours The Adventures continue. When it reopened on June 3rd, 2011, as Star Tours The Adventures continue, it had an updated ride system, HD video, better animatronics. And now what's really cool is because it's digital and high def and everything, they're able to add new scenes from now for, you know, all the time and randomize it. You go on at one time, you go to these things. Neat. So it's nice because each time you go, it's kind of a different experience. Mm-hmm. Although there have been times where I've gone where I've ridden multiple times and I feel like I'm getting the same couple things. And
sure,
I'm like, come on.
Not timing it right.
But they just added Crate to it recently. Mm-hmm. Before that, they added some things from the other Star Wars movies. So they're going to keep adding stuff, and I think that's great. An attraction that you can continue to refresh in that easily, love it.
That's cool. You know, and I really appreciate the animatronics in this ride. The C-3POs are just awesome. I mean, even the one that's in the ride queue is just so cool.
I love the animatronic in the
The little animatronic, just the little, I don't know, the droids robot that are doing the, I guess it's luggage. Oh. The luggage droids.
Do you ever sit there and watch and it like x-rays stuff and it shows you stuff that's in the bags?
Yep,
and there's some gags in there.
I think that's fun.
All right.
Well, before we wrap up Tomorrowland, you almost forgot we did not do the dedication. So the dedication plaque for Tomorrowland is a vista into a world of wondrous ideas signifying man's achievements, a step into the future with predictions of constructed things to come. Tomorrow offers new frontiers in science, adventures and ideals, the atomic age, the challenge of outer space, and the hope for a peaceful, unified world. So that was spoken by Walter E. Disney on July 17th, 1955. So I thought this was interesting. He actually dedicated the land twice because the first time when he went through it, he was told that he wasn't actually on the air yet. So
he had
to restart once the television viewers were watching.
Oh, yeah. And I think if you ever have a chance to watch the opening day show that aired on TV, it's kind of a mess. At one point, people lost their microphone. Stuff wasn't working right. Anyway.
Nerves are running really high.
And Tomorrowland was like the least done land when Disneyland opened because they just had some like exhibits in there. It was kind of interesting. Well, that finishes up our topic of Tomorrowland. Next week, we will cover Main Street USA and only Main Street USA. We might talk about the entrance plaza area a little bit. And then the week after that, we'll start on California Adventure. So that should be exciting to kind of talk. There's already a lot of history and stuff in California Adventure, if you can believe that. Well, let's get to some feedback.
Doug Stevenson commented on our Fantasyland tour last week saying, "Makes you wonder how Walt would have felt about Walt Disney Imagineering creating vast new lands and only putting in a few attractions. Oh well, these are the low capacity days of Bob Iger and company after all." Doug also wanted our comments on the Solo, a Star Wars Story trailer that was released earlier this week. So first, you know, I kind of wonder that too sometime, Doug, how Walt would think, what he would think about the direction that his parks have taken. You know, would he be proud? Would he be a little discouraged? You know, it's hard to say because it was a different time that Walt was in. We didn't have as many movies. And so now there's just so many different movies and so many different universes, I guess, within Walt Disney's playbook that they try and they really do try to theme the rides around the movies now. Whereas before, he didn't have that. You didn't have that many movies, so you couldn't theme your rides around it. So it had to be original. So it's interesting if he would have continued down the same path and continued with the original rides, or maybe he would have started bringing the movies into it more like they have.
There's a lot to talk about with this. So first of all, this kind of goes down the trail of something that was suggested in our Slack, which if you become a Patreon at a certain level, you can get access to our Slack
our
and talk
cast member level.
Cast member level, you can talk to us directly through a chat all week long. We talk about all different types of stuff in there, and it was suggested to do an episode where we talk about like the synergy between the movies and the rides and stuff, which I think would be a really interesting discussion. And we probably will do that when we get done with our tour of the resort. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to Walt Disney said he didn't ever want to do something twice. So a lot of the attractions that were around when he was there, like, there's not a lot of duplications.
Right.
And so I think what would have happened if Walt would have lived to be 100, let's say, I think that he would have been caught up with Epcot. Not what we got as Epcot, but the actual experimental prototype community of tomorrow in Florida. And I think he would have gone off and worked on, I mean, he kind of did Disneyland, you know, and I don't think he was really interested. He was interested in plussing it, but I don't think he was interested in trying to recreate it. And I don't think that there would be parks necessarily all around the world like there are today, because I think that he would have moved on. I think he would have done Epcot, and I think he would have, I mean, who knows what would have happened after Epcot? I mean, that's such a huge monumental thing anyway. So who knows? Sometimes I think if he would have lived, like, look at the mass amount of innovation that happened during his lifetime.
Yeah.
And what he pushed his Imagineers to do. You know, a lot of the Imagineers have been interviewed, and they said, you know, we would tell Walt, like, this wasn't possible. And he said, well, make it possible. And they would, because he was the type of guy that I think he's quoted. I don't know if this is a real quote from him, but I like to think it is. If you can dream it, you can do it. And I think that's true. I think if with enough effort and time and dedication and money, you can make your dreams come true. And you can make anything that you can think about become a reality. Something interesting just happened today. You know, we were talking about Tomorrowland and how futuristic, and people were really big into thinking about the future back in the 50s. Well, today, I don't know if you saw it, Teresa, but the Falcon Heavy rocket launched at Cape Canaveral. That was like the biggest rocket we've ever launched ever, and it was successful. And people all over the internet were talking about it today. And I watched a video about it with James earlier, and watched it launch and stuff. And I felt giddy and excited. And I just wonder, what could we have seen from Walt if his life wasn't cut short by cancer? And, you know, where would we be now? I mean, you look at the, you know, you look at the Steve Jobs, you look at the Elon Musks. Right now, he's doing a lot of stuff to push things forward. You know, the Walt Disneys. You look at all these people, these innovators that just push things, and they ask, you know, they don't say, oh, we can't do that, or that's not possible. They just go, why not? Let's do it. Let's try it. What's there to lose? And maybe you do lose stuff. And I'm sure there's plenty of things that Disney did, with Disneyland especially, even, that did. You know, the did flop. And you know what he did? He innovated. He iterated. He said, that didn't work. Let's get rid of it. Let's put something new in. And he wasn't afraid to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people, and I think Disney of now is afraid.
I think so too. I think with how, and the other problem too is they kind of almost have to be afraid, because how much money they're sinking into either the parks or the attractions or the movies or whatever, they're dumping a ton. I mean, it's not like Disney's hurting for money, but they are dumping a ton of money that it would really, really bite them if they failed on it. So I think I think that maybe Disney's Imagineers are a little bit, I don't want to say more afraid, but I think they're just more conservative now. And so they go with things that they know the people like. And so that's probably why we're seeing a lot of attractions based on very popular Disney movies.
I disagree. And here's why. So I don't think it's the Imagineers. I think the Imagineers are still
the company.
I think the Imagineers are still coming up with great, wonderful, crazy blue sky ideas is what it's called.
Sure.
You know, anything we can do. And I think what happens is you get an accountant somewhere and they go, Well, yeah, we could add, this just happened. I watched a video from Mickey Views, Braden over at Mickey Views. He does a lot of YouTube videos on Disney World news. Well, Disney news, but he mostly covers Disney World. And he was covering Toy Story Land and how it changed from the original concept drawing of Toy Story Land to the what newer is? Concept mm-hmm. drawing and what it's going to be. And they removed little things that are Disney. So, you know, there was a paper airplane that was on the side of the roller coaster that kind of just place made it, but they got rid of it for budget reasons. There was some like jacks, like toy jacks, sure. but like big ones next mm-hmm. to the part of the attraction. And they cut that for money because they don't get a return on investment
sure,
on an extra
for
prop.
Decorations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But what they have to realize is what makes Disney Disney and what makes people pay Disney prices mm-hmm. is that extra stuff.
Exactly.
And they're kind of getting, and I know this isn't Disneyland, but they're kind of getting into this in Disney World with the monorail. So the monorail has been neglected out in Disney World for a long time. There was a thing just a couple months ago where one of the doors like was open during it going down the track, and there's video of it. They've had issues where chunks of the beam have fallen apart.
Yeah.
So they look at it and they go, okay, well, we don't charge anything for it. It's not an actual ride, really. It just gets people from the hotels or, you know, whatever. But what they don't realize is people pay extra to stay at the Polynesian. People pay extra to stay at the Contemporary. People pay extra to stay at the Grand Floridian because it's connected to the monorail. And people like riding it. It's with Disneyland, too, it's in, like, logos and everything. Like, when I think of a monorail, you think Disney. Like, mm-hmm. there's monorails everywhere, but, or not everywhere, but there's monorails a lot of places. But people don't, when you say monorail, people don't think Las Vegas. People don't think, you know, a zoo, necessarily. They think Disney, because it's been, like, a part of their thing. And they don't, it's hard for an accountant to sit there and be like, okay, well, we're not charging anything for this, so why should we build new monorails? Because these ones kind of work.
Yeah, I get it.
So
I do, I do wish that we had that we were getting more. This is my big thing, is I wish that we were getting more new original. Attractions that are original. I appreciate the movies, but I don't necessarily need to see the movies all over the place. And I've kind of touched on this before because I feel like there's some specific movies that I feel like they're overdoing and other ones that they're completely ignoring that are awesome and could work very well for different things.
How many decades before we got a Little Mermaid attraction?
Well, and the fact that we're just now getting a Toy Story Land. Like,
right.
Toy Story came out how long ago?
Well,
whatever.
A great example of this, too, is Frozen.
People still go.
People are obsessed with Frozen, and it took them like 2 years to put the first Frozen anything, and then they went overboard on it, and it was like people are gone.
Everywhere.
Well, and people are over it. Mm-hmm. It's been 2 years. I don't know. Well, moving on. Simply Kelly. Oh, sorry. Star Wars, Solo, A Star Wars Story. Doug, we don't normally talk about this stuff. I said I'd throw it in there because you asked about it, but we try to keep things just to the parks. When I saw the TV spot during the Super Bowl, I got really excited. When I saw the full trailer the next day they got released online, I got a little less excited.
Yeah, I'm on the fence, too. Like, I'm excited because it's more... I would love to know what the backstory for Han Solo is, because I think that he's just a really awesome, really fascinating character.
Complex.
But I'm just kind of worried, because I always get worried when we get movies that are, especially since, okay, so when we first met Han was how many years ago? We met Han back in what, the 70s?
Yep.
So the fact that we're now just meeting young Han how many years later, and so we're having to recast him, and so I always just get worried about, you know, is everything gonna make sense. So I'm worried, but I'm also very excited. Am I gonna go to opening night? Yes, of course,
right?
But
me too.
We'll see. We'll let you know what our thoughts are after we've seen it. Maybe we'll talk about it on either Facebook or Twitter or something.
Sure. I will also say that I'm just glad they finally released a trailer, because there was concern that they were going to push it back to December, which actually I'm in favor of, because I'd rather have a Star Wars movie every December. Mm-hmm. But I think they're trying to rejigger their schedule for all that stuff. Were you going to say something?
I don't know how I feel about who they cast for young Han.
Yeah.
I'm really on the fence about that, because in the trailers, I was like, yeah, no, he totally looks like a young Harrison Ford. And then other times, I'm like, Why did they pick that guy? So
people online are most excited for Donald Glover as Lando Calrissian. Yeah. They think he's going to just...
I think that that looks like a good casting.
People are like, why couldn't they have made a Lando Calrissian movie? Because then it wouldn't have mattered as much.
Maybe they will. I don't
know. All I got to say about that is, well, what have we here? Simply Kelly on Twitter commented, wanted to say that I really enjoy your podcast. I just finished the Disneyland College program, and as a no longer Disney cast member, I want to say that your show is amazing and is very good at keeping up on Disney news. Can't wait till next week when you go to my home. Kelly, hopefully you enjoyed it. I talked with you a little bit on Twitter. She used to work at the she worked at the Galactic Grill in Tomorrowland, so not on an attraction. We don't really cover food locations very much. I have had a good burger or two there. I do kind of wish their food was a little bit better, but it is what it is. Hopefully we did your home justice. You also talked about hoping to do an episode or two maybe about old attractions in the history of certain lands and stuff. And I think that that's something maybe we tackle in the future.
I think so too, because doing research with Tomorrowland, I was just amazed at what all of the closed attractions were that were in Tomorrowland. It was just a laundry list. I didn't notice while researching the other lands that any of them had near the amount of closed attractions. So that was pretty interesting.
I think the land that had the least closed attractions is probably Fantasyland. Because I think almost everything is still open.
Either that or New Orleans Square. What else has been there? You know. But anyways.
Exactly. Well, as we wrap up this week, we want to thank you for listening each and every week. Please don't forget to support the show if you can by going to DisneylandWeekly.com/support or by sharing Disneyland Weekly on social media or by word of mouth with other Disneyland fans that you know.
That is all we have for you this week. You can help the show by leaving a review on iTunes, letting us know how we're doing, good or bad. If you want to keep up with the show, you can follow us on Facebook by searching for Disneyland Weekly, on Twitter at DL Weekly, or sending us an email at feedback@DisneylandWeekly.com. Please feel free to email, Facebook, or tweet at us any questions, feedback, or suggestions that you may have about the show.
Yeah, this week has been a very active week for people commenting.
And we love it.
Yes, and we love it. So the more feedback you guys give us, you know, sometimes we just like chatting. If you just want to like tweet at us or Facebook us, feel free. Also, if you want to get more instant feedback and more chat, don't forget to become a patron over at Patreon. We're at the
cast member level,
which is just $10 or more per month. You get access to that Slack channel that we use to talk about it. Plus, you get access to outtakes episodes that are released regularly, plus access to Patreon-only content. You get to connect to other patrons, and you obviously get a shout out on the podcast. You get that too if you just comment and send us some good feedback. We love hearing about it. So anyway, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles, just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.